It ain't easy being green.
Yeah.
How about it ain't easy being a plate of frog legs?
How dare you?
Now, why don't you and your girlfriend get off this stage before I start craving a ham sandwich, waka waka?
Why don't you make us Frankenstein?
Oh, no. Wait. Hold it. Oh, listen, everybody. Listen. What Piggy actually meant to say, Mr. Swagger, is we understand and we don't want any trouble from you or your mother.
What? So,
what are they saying?
Excuse me! Excuse me!
Excuse me!
You're listening to Smack Talk Radio Live, your source for news, views, and opinions on everything wrestling, from the big leagues to the local scene. Now, here's James McDonald and Corey Callahan.
Well, Halloween has come and gone with nothing but tricks from the WWE creative team. Hello, everyone. You're listening to Smack Talk Radio Live, and we are broadcasting live to you from the Smack Talk studios in Vancouver, British Columbia. My name is James McDonald, and as always, I'm joined by my colleague, Corey Callahan.
Hello.
Well, Corey, what are your feelings so far heading into Survivor Series?
Really? You're going to ask me that? Everyone, I'm just getting this out of the way right now. Even though I don't want to be tonight, I definitely plan to be more negative than positive. I'm still just perplexed at how you can go from the hottest angle with CM Punk earlier in the year to where we are now. Ugh.
No kidding. Well, we have another awesome show for you all this week. We're going to go over what's interesting in our Tale of the Tape. We're also going to cover today's WWE Quarterly Stockholders Conference Call in our post-to-post report.
And in our local wrestling scene tonight, we are talking live with who we are calling our local wrestling insider, Corey Basso. We're going to get his thoughts on the ECCW's most recent show, Halloween Hell. And in tonight's top five, James?
Well, Corey, in the spirit of how The Rock and Cena are progressing, we're going to run down the top five worst storylines in wrestling history.
As always, you can check out www.smacktalkradiolive.com or join in on facebook.com/smacktalkradio.
Right now, though, let's top rope superplex things off with the Tale of the Tape.
It's time for the Tale of the Tape.
It is Thursday evening, Smack Talk Radio Live, back on the air. James, how you doing tonight?
Not too bad, buddy. How about yourself?
Not bad.
Did you have a good Halloween?
Well, as I said on Monday, it was pretty uneventful. We were stuck inside watching Raw and doing our SRL on a Monday night podcast.
Hope you all had a good time listening to it.
How many people do you think actually listen to it?
Probably more than we think.
Maybe. So, you brought up Monday, SRL on a Monday night. Why don't we just quickly, before we get into everything, just remind everyone what the plan is?
Okay, well, on Monday nights, SRL on a Monday night is going to be our weekly kind of like review of Monday Night Raw type show. And it's just basically a forum for you, the listener out there, to have something to listen to after you watch Monday Night Raw and, you know, call in and give your voice, your opinions, and just, yeah.
Yeah, we haven't had any callers yet.
It'll come.
You could also email us on air at smacktalkradiolive.com, and that might be a better way to get your opinion out there, and if your email is a good, you know, have a take, and if it doesn't suck, we'll read it on the air.
Of course.
So, like I said in the intro there, James,
wasn't the greatest Raw this past Monday, was it?
Well, I'm not exactly a very happy camper these days.
No.
Can you blame me?
No, I'm in the same boat, buddy.
You know what really is frustrating to me?
What's that?
Is that this morning I spent 4 hours trying to buy pre-sale WrestleMania tickets because, of course, you and I, it's official. We're going to Miami to watch WrestleMania in person.
That's right. We are going to broadcast to you live from Miami, Florida, WrestleMania 28.
Oh, you're just giving the surprise up already, are you?
Why not? something for them to look forward to.
But anyway, but we don't have tickets yet because I spent 4 hours searching for tickets. You know, you find your tickets, you give them up, you search them over. You can give up those tickets and search for new ones.
Yeah.
I did that over and over and over again for 4 hours straight, and so I could not find what we wanted.
Kind of a frustrating process then.
It is. And the problem with pre-sale is that not every ticket is available, right? Mm. So you have to... You take a chance giving up certain tickets, hoping that you get better ones.
Right.
But I did have the 12th row dead center at $450 a ticket each. But I decided to... Well, no, actually, I wanted to buy those ones. And before I could hit okay, the time had expired with the Ticketmaster website.
Really?
And I wasn't able to get them.
That's kind of hurting.
And I never got as good as tickets since.
Oh, jeez.
So official tickets go on sale Saturday. So I'm going to try it again. Hopefully I'll have an update for you on Monday. I mean, we better have tickets come Monday or our whole trip is in jeopardy.
Yeah, no kidding.
All right. So tale of the tape.
Tale of the tape. We're going to talk a little bit about what's interesting, which honestly hasn't been very much lately.
Okay, well, let's start things off with the big show and Alberto Del Rio.
Valuable time to try to regain himself as the champ's back in the ring. And again on the offense. Wow. It looked like he was going for the patented kick. Big Show with a swat. Here's the cover. Hook of the leg and the champion got him.
Well, this match. Big Show.
Big Show with a big right hand to the jaw of Alberto Del Rio.
There you go. Big Show, Alberto Del Rio. Right off the bat, what are your thoughts on Big Show and Alberto Del Rio?
Oh, it's poor booking choice, definitely. I mean, the match... where do I go with Monday Night Raw? It was just... The matches were so pointless storyline-wise. Mm-hmm. You know, you could have worked things in such a different way...
Yeah.
...than the way that they done it.
Yeah. You know? So you have... You put the Big Show, who is in a feud with Mark Henry at this point.
That's right.
You put him up against the champion, and he beats the WWE champion cleanly on Monday night.
Oh, I'm totally against that. I think it kind of, you know, disgraces the belt and makes the champion look weak.
Yeah.
So, but it was kind of interesting what they were trying to do. They were trying to cross over the two feuds on Monday
Night. Yeah, because you also had CM Punk taking on Mark Henry.
Mark Henry, that's right.
Maybe I should quickly play a clip from Mark Henry and CM Punk. Let's do that here.
Well, I don't understand Spanish, but it almost sounds like Del Rio has directed Rodriguez again to go after Henry with his shoe.
Ladies and gentlemen, the winner of this match as a result of a disqualification, the World Heavyweight Champion, Mark Henry.
CM Punk, that means CM Punk lost. Yeah, but wait a minute. Well, technically, you may be right.
Yeah, so on Monday Night Raw, there you had it. You had Mark Henry winning by disqualification, which I guess was all right. You couldn't really have either of these guys win the match, realistically,
because
you're either going to make your champion look weak or you're going to continue to bury CM Punk.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, give us the background on what's happening here.
So anyways, like we were saying before, Big Show and Mark Henry, their feud is kind of continuing after their big ring collapsing finish at the Vengeance pay-per-view. Now, this past week on Raw, Henry was facing CM Punk, and like we said, Big Show was facing Del Rio, both non-title matches. Now, Henry, like we just heard, would win via disqualification after Rodriguez interfered in the match and was hitting him with his shoe, funnily enough. But the real shocker would come later on in the show when Del Rio, our WWE champion, would lose cleanly to the Big Show after a painfully long match. And
we had discussed this on Monday about how this match did go ridiculously long. And I think there is something to that. There probably is a backstory. We'll never know what it is.
They skewered the time for the rest of the show. That's
yeah,
for sure.
It was a ridiculously long match. I can't get over it. I mean, even when I was watching it again today, I'm thinking, you know, I'm fast forwarding and I'm like, oh my God, how long is this match?
Had to be like 25 minutes long. Yeah. I mean, it was 9, 10 minutes long before they went to the first commercial break.
There is a reason for it. Something happened in the timing of Monday Night Raw, and like I said, we'll never know, but there was something to that.
I mean, the match itself was pointless because the whole purpose of it was essentially just to set up Del Rio and CM Punk for Survivor Series.
Yeah.
Now, you could have done this in hundreds of different ways, but instead they decide to...
You could have put any heel against CM Punk.
And you could have just...
CM Punk didn't even need to have the match with Henry earlier in the night.
Yeah.
You could have just had Punk run in on Del Rio's match facing whoever.
And what about Big Show and Del Rio? What is the purpose of the Big Show beating Del Rio cleanly?
I don't know. Maybe it's to make him look strong going into Survivor Series against Mark Henry, maybe?
But even after he beat the champion, if you actually listen to Cole and Lawler and all that, they kind of, they don't even treat it like it's a very big deal. The man just pinned the world, or, you know, the WWE champion.
Mm-hmm.
And they acted like it was just another match on Monday Night Raw.
Yeah.
As I said on Monday, on Monday's show, this is going to get buried, and I doubt the Big Show will get a title shot, even though he realistically should. You know, nothing is going to come out of this. So I still ask the question, what is the point of having the Big Show beat Del Rio? There's no purpose behind it.
There was no purpose. It was just, last Monday night's Raw was a prime example of terrible booking across the board.
Mm-hmm.
Basically what it boils down to.
I like to refer to it as booking on a nightly basis, because that's what they're doing. Mm-hmm. I swear they just show up into a city on a Monday, and the Monday morning they just write a show that is that fits for that night and that night only.
And they don't seem to think about the cause and effect of how they're booking,
mm-hmm.
of how this is going to affect things down the road and how it's going to make their champion look. Like, that made Del Rio look incredibly weak.
Yeah.
And he's the champion.
I know.
So
it's really hard to understand and wrap my head around why they would do something like this. I mean, for the last couple of days, I've been trying to think of why they would do it, and I can't come up with a reason.
You know, it just seems like their titles are more meaningless than ever these days.
Absolutely.
So
I would say, you know, like, the titles have lost all credibility. I mean, you look at the UFC, their titles mean something.
Oh, absolutely.
Though those titles have prestige.
Yep.
You know, they're building a history behind them. And then you look at the WWE and their championship titles. I mean, it's a laughingstock.
And it's like they're pushing this whole John Laurinaitis, Triple H, Kevin Nash angle over their champion. And it doesn't make sense to me.
Mm-hmm. I know.
You know?
And that's something I want to get into, is just what is the credibility level of the championship belts these days in the WWE?
Not very good. Like, I'm going to go over a little bit here on last week's Raw and about the titles here.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if you guys noticed, but last week on Raw, almost all their title holders lost their matches and lost them cleanly.
Yeah.
Like, Air Boom, for example, the tag team champions, they lost cleanly to Wade Barrett and Cody Rhodes, who aren't even a tag team. After Wade Barrett hit Evan Bourne with the Wasteland.
And again, Cole and Lawler, after the match was over, they acted like it was no big deal.
No big deal.
Ah, they beat the tag team champions tonight. That was it.
So does this mean Barrett and Rhodes are going to get a tag team title
Probably
shot?
Not. And the other thing was, is that match, what the focus of that match wasn't about the tag team titles, or even to have a shot, or for Barrett and Cody Rhodes to have a shot at the tag team titles.
No, I think the whole match was just to push Wade Barrett. They're
building him up again.
Yeah.
And so you throw him, you throw the tag team champions at him, and you start building them that way. Again, you could have used any other tag team.
You could have used any other tag team.
I don't get it.
No, I don't either. And for example, Dolph Ziggler, he's your U.S. champion, and he lost cleanly to Zack Ryder after Ryder hit him with a Rough Rider.
A non-title match.
And again, another non-title match, and champion loses cleanly.
What is your thinking behind this?
Let's just crap on our belts, right? And then, of course, you had Del Rio, which was the big one, your WWE champion, and he lost cleanly to the Big Show in a match that was completely pointless, in my opinion.
Yeah. How many times has the WWE title changed hands this year, James?
Funny you should ask, Corey. The WWE title, if you can believe it, has changed hands 7 times this year.
So we are in the 11th month of this year, and the title has changed 7 times.
John Cena has won the title 3 times this year alone.
I seem to remember a time when champions would be champion for over a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that didn't seem that too long.
Back in the 80s, yeah. When Hogan was running with it and whatnot.
But. Yeah. I mean, the...
But now you've got Cena, who beat The Miz, he beat Rey Mysterio, and he beat Alberto Del Rio. And he's won the title 3 times.
And here we were, how long ago, saying that remember the night after WrestleMania, John Cena said... the night after WrestleMania the night after the last previous WrestleMania, I should say... John Cena said he would win the title and he would keep it all the way until facing The Rock at next year's WrestleMania.
Jeez, that sure didn't happen.
And remember, I sat there and said that he would not lose it when he did win it, and he would keep it all the way to the end.
See, that would have been smart booking, but
He's lost it twice since. And then he's gained it back three times.
He's lost it three times.
He's lost it three times and gained it back three times.
Yeah, I guess if you want to look at it that way. Let me throw some numbers at you here, Corey. So the WWE title, so far this year alone, 2011, has changed hands seven times. The World Heavyweight title has changed hands six times. The Intercontinental title has changed hands three times. The United States title twice. And the tag titles have changed hands five times. So that's 23 times this year we've seen title belts change hands.
Not even to mention the whole idea that, you know, Cody Rhodes faced Randy Orton at Vengeance mm-hmm. in a non-title match, you know, Cody Rhodes being the Intercontinental Champion, of right. course. Whatever happened with that? Nothing. Why couldn't he have faced Cody? Why couldn't Randy have faced Cody Rhodes for the title in that match?
I don't know. Apparently, Randy Orton's above the Intercontinental title now.
Which, again, which destroying is, the credibility of the Intercontinental title.
It's stupid. Remember back in the days when Macho Man held the Intercontinental title? It was like a secondary world title almost.
I know.
It was almost just as prestigious.
And
now
people believed in it.
Now it's just like a status symbol for your mid-card, essentially.
Yeah.
You know, mid-card status symbol.
You know what? They're not using titles. They're not putting belts on guys because those people deserve to be champion. I firmly believe that they're now putting belts on guys to help them build a reputation with the crowd because they have nothing else going for them. Like, they need that belt to put them into the spotlight. But when they are put into that spotlight, they're not... It doesn't really matter that yeah. they're the champion.
It seems like it's almost a crutch for poor storyline, right?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, it's hard for me to explain what I'm trying to say. Like,
no, I know what you're saying, but yeah,
you're putting the belt on guys that need that in their career to make themselves relevant,
move them to the next level, so to speak.
Yeah,
you know, and in the old days they used to do that through creative writing and, you know, interesting angles, mm-hmm. and that's what would give guys credibility. And now it's just, you know, let's throw a mid-card belt on this guy for a few months, and
yeah,
you know, when we're ready to bring the next guy up, we'll just, you know, throw the belt on him.
And even in the WWE title picture, like, you don't need to have the WWE championship on Cena's waist when he goes in to face The Rock at WrestleMania, because that storyline doesn't need the belt in the picture to make it a good storyline.
No, absolutely not. I mean, you're going to sell tickets with Rock Cena whether the title's in the picture or not.
You can use that belt to focus on two other wrestlers who need that belt to enhance their storyline. Whether or not that happens, I don't know. It probably will end up on the waist of Cena, you know, heading into WrestleMania.
You think so?
I think
so. Or do you think they're just going to completely forget about what he said
at last year's WrestleMania?
Like they've done so many times.
I wouldn't be surprised if they just ignored what he had said. I mean, that won't surprise me.
How many times have they done that this year alone?
Yeah.
Just ignored things that they've, you know. That's the thing that, you know, why is wrestling so disappointing these last few months, you know?
I know.
It's got to do with the continuity. I think a lot of it has to do with continuity.
That's a fully loaded question for me, because I could go for an hour as to why wrestling has been so disappointing. I mean, I'm 28 years old, and I've been following it my entire life. And I can't believe that I still follow it to this day, because I have no reason to.
It's, yeah, there's no real reason to bring you back the following week. And there's nothing that's drawing new people in.
I would say a large majority of people watching wrestling today are only watching it because it's a habit to turn on Monday Night Raw on a Monday evening.
Yeah.
I don't think they, you know, that's the only reason.
If they're
not tuning in to find out what happens with, you know, Big Show and Mark Henry or Del Rio and Punk, they're not doing that. That's not a reason to tune in right now.
It's just like they're tuning in on the off chance there might be something interesting or
something.
They're
waiting for another CM Punk-esque type incident that happened in Vegas earlier this year, yeah, where everyone is blown off the charts. Everyone's like, oh my God, what just happened there?
See, now that was drawing new people in.
Yes. In the last 2 years, I've only seen it happen twice. When Nexus came in,
that's right,
and ripped up the ring, and when CM Punk did that shoot promo in Vegas. Those are the only two times I've legitimately been excited about wrestling in the past 2 years.
Go back and listen to some of our shows in July, people.
Yeah. No, it's true. I mean, yeah, you want to talk about how negative we're being right now, go back and listen to some of our earlier shows, and you'll see how positive we were the night after that CM Punk did that shoot promo.
And the Money in the Bank pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy how we've done a complete 180 mm-hmm. in, you have the hottest angle with CM Punk earlier this year. I mean, he had the mainstream media talking about wrestling in a positive way, which is almost unheard of in the 2000 era. You know what I mean? In the year 2000, that's almost unheard of to have people talking about wrestling in a positive light.
It's different from the 90s, that's for sure.
And he has that. He had that in the palm of his hands, and the WWE had that in the palm of their hands, and we've gone from the hottest thing ever to the worst thing ever.
I firmly believe, I don't think even the WWE knew what they had on their hands back in the summertime. And they've screwed it all up now.
As with every single time they get something decent.
They screwed it up with the Nexus. They screwed it up with CM Punk now. I mean, there's a reason that the WWE has, their viewership has been dropping in the second half of Raw for the past 7 to 10 weeks now.
It's got to be. I mean, people just are not liking what they see.
People are tuning in for the first half hour to an hour, and they see what's, you know, they see what's put out there, and then they go, it's not so great. And
Monday
Night Football. Pawn Stars.
Yeah, exactly. How much of this has to do with Triple H being somewhat in charge now?
I don't know if that's really so much the case, Triple H being in charge. I think it really has a lot to do with the creative team that they have in place. There's a lot of illogicalities in their storylines. There's really poor booking. I mean, Raw was a perfect example.
Would we point the finger at Stephanie then? Because she is in charge of the creative writing team.
Well, then, yeah, I'd point the finger at her, definitely.
I mean, something's got to change here because they are going down and down and down. And me being the most, one of the most hardcore wrestling fans out there, I am getting turned off at what they're doing. And the thing is people would argue against that with me. Like, I know for a fact a few people who would argue against me saying, oh, yeah, wrestling's really good right now, actually. Or I don't know what you're talking about, Corey. I don't mind it. Listen, when you actually analyze Monday Night Raw and you see your world champion getting beat cleanly by the Big Show.
All your champions.
Yeah, when you see that happening and when you actually pay attention to that, there's a difference between watching Monday Night Raw and, you just went outside, smoked a joint, you come back inside, you're watching Raw, but you're not really watching Raw.
That's what they want. They want viewers to come in and just turn their brain off.
That's what I'm saying,
And eat whatever's fed to them. And it's like, they don't expect you to put two and two together and to...
So you could watch it that way, or you could watch it how we watch it, and how, probably the listeners of our show are watching it, where they're trying to make sense of what they're doing, and there's nothing making sense.
You think they'd pay attention to continuity in the longest-running weekly episodic show of all time.
There is none.
And they don't pay attention to continuity at all.
No. Continuity is not a word in that locker room.
Triple H and CM Punk, perfect example.
Yeah.
I mean, they're tagging up right after they had that heated personal feud together. I mean, it's... Again, it doesn't make any sense. And they've even been stooping so low as to insult our intelligence lately. Like, for example, the whole Cena announcing The Rock's going to be his tag partner. Well, geez, we knew about that, 3 months ago?
I know.
They did a press release.
And what would have been so awesome is if he had turned him down.
And
why can't you turn him down?
And we're supposed to be surprised?
Why can The Rock not turn Cena down and throw the whole main event of Survivor Series in jeopardy?
And then
to
force them to tag up, because that would make sense.
To me, personally, if I don't even know what the main event is at Survivor Series because The Rock turned Cena down and we're in a bit of chaos heading into Survivor Series, to me, that's more interesting.
Oh, of course.
To me, that's... Oh, my God. What is going to happen at Survivor Series? The Rock turned Cena down. I don't know what's going to happen. That seems more interesting to me than what they're doing.
Let's pay $50 to find out.
Yeah, that seems more interesting than what they're doing.
No.
This is going to be an obvious squash match with some sort of dissension, or tension, I should say, between Rock and Cena. It's so obvious, isn't it?
It's
absolutely mind-boggling what they're thinking these days. They're thinking on a nightly basis, and they're just forgetting about all history, and they're just making it up as they go along, and it's extremely frustrating. And they need to fix it fast because, as I get to later in the post-to-post report, their numbers are dwindling.
Oh, big time.
And even Vince McMahon said today he's blaming it on their creative direction. Well, if you're blaming it on your creative direction,
then
do something about it.
Exactly.
I know.
Exactly.
It's stupid. It makes no sense. I'm pissed off.
Yeah. Hey, man. We are in the same boat heading down the same creek with no paddles.
I mean, you look at The Miz and R-Truth heading into Survivor Series here. You just had John Cena single-handedly defeat The Miz and R-Truth on this past Monday Raw. You know, he beats The Miz. R-Truth tries to do a run-in. Cena gives him the attitude adjustment. And then he's almost laughing about it. It's like it's a big joke. So you have Cena picking apart the two guys he's supposed to go up against at Survivor Series by himself.
So why
do we even need The Rock to come into the picture?
Why am I going to buy the pay-per-view?
I know. Right?
Why am I going to pay $50? It's terrible booking. It's illogical writing. And yeah, like you just said, Vince realizes this is the problem. So yeah, McMahon, get on it.
If you were to ask me, why is wrestling so disappointing? My first response would be, is because there is no surprises anymore in wrestling.
No.
I mean, having Kevin Nash come out of the crowd at the end of, you know, a pay-per-view, that's not that surprising to me.
No.
That's just a, to me, I immediately reflect on that as a last minute swerve that you just came up with off the top of your head, and boom, there you go. Easy swerve.
Yeah, it's just, I think a lot of it too has to do with the fact that that we kind of grew up in the Attitude Era, and so we're kind of used to the more controversial and cutting edge WWE than what we're seeing now with the whole PG era and the kid friendly program. I think that's a lot of it. I find a lot of people that are our age are kind of jaded that way.
I mean, I agree. It's never going to be like the Attitude Era.
No.
I mean, you slap the PG rating on your product, of course, it's never going to be the same. But you can still create the element of surprise and spontaneity by creative writing. And they just don't have it.
No.
I don't understand it. I don't know. I could go about this for, you know, a long time. But what's the point? Let's just move on.
The poll question. Log on to facebook.com/smacktalkradio and cast your vote.
All right, buddy. Tonight's poll question. Who should the WWE champ? Who should be WWE champion right now? Why don't you go through our choices?
Okay, we have John Cena, Alberto Del Rio, CM Punk, Triple H, or the man you wanted to put on the list, David Arquette.
That's right, David Arquette, baby.
If you want to take part, log on to facebook.com/smacktalkradio and cast your vote. Now, James, this is an interesting question because obviously Del Rio is the champion right now, but should he be the champion?
That is a loaded question, my friend.
I know. Well.
And I say yes. I think Del Rio should be the champion right now. Yeah.
I think at this point, I would put the title on CM Punk. That's just my opinion. Because CM Punk, to me, carried the WWE through the summer on his back. And they just basically ripped everything out from underneath them.
But you know what? I think it's more interesting to see CM Punk in a chase program for the title right now. Instead of being chased for it.
It's just such a poor chase program. I'm not even interested in it.
No, I mean, it could be more interesting than it is. But generally, when you're heading into a big pay-per-view, you kind of want to see your baby face in a, you know, chasing the title instead of being chased by a heel.
I guess, but I have really no reason to be interested in Punk versus Del Rio at Survivor Series. What have they done at this point?
Nothing, but we've got another 2 weeks, so let's see how they can muck it up even more.
I guess. I don't know. I'm very disappointed right now, and in fact, I want to cancel the show. I'm that disappointed.
Yeah, right. What do I say to that?
This is our last week broadcasting. I'm not doing another show until they get their act together.
We're editing this out after the show's done.
All right, let's move on, James. We got to take a little break here. But coming up on Smack Talk Radio Live, we're going to be talking to our local wrestler insider. His name's Corey Basso. We're going to talk to him about this past week's ECCW show, Halloween Hell. And
keeping in the spirit of negativity, in tonight's top five, we are running down the top five worst wrestling storylines of all time.
And our post-to-post report next.
This is Smack Talk Radio Live.
Things will never be the same. That's just the way it is. Oh, yeah.
Hear me. Oh, come on.
That's just the way it is.
Changes. All I see is racist faces. Misplaced hate makes disgrace to racist. We under, I wonder what it takes to make this one better place. Let's erase the wasted. Take the evil out the people, they'll be acting right. It's both black and white, and smoke a crack tonight. And the only time we chill is when we kill each other. It takes guilt to be real time to heal each other. And if ever since heaven sent, we ain't ready to see a black president.
catching you up with the business of the business. It's time for the Post to Post Report.
All right, James, the Post to Post Report, catching you up on the business
of the business.
I wasn't going to say it with you this time. It's very dorky for us to say it together, hey, don't you think?
No, it's extremely cool and chic.
All right, well, let's get right into the Post to Post Report this week. We have a ton to cover. The big news this week would be the third quarter conference call with investors that happened this morning, but there are a lot of numbers and stats, so I'm going to save that for our weekly financial segment right after the news headlines.
And in a little bit more exciting news, Mick Foley made his return to the WWE Wednesday as he made an unannounced appearance at a WWE house show in Belfast, Ireland. Foley was the special guest referee for the Cena and Morrison versus the Miz and R-Truth tag team match. Foley also appeared after the main event of the Punk versus Del Rio match, where Del Rio enjoyed numerous finishing maneuvers complemented by Mr. Socko to end the show. Now, what's interesting to note is that Mick Foley has been taken off the TD Garden and WWE website, where he was announced for the November 14th episode of Raw.
WWE diva Maryse was released from her contract with the company on October 28th.
A
move that was considered a surprise to many backstage, probably met with some disappointment with some fans as well.
Again, now, boo!
Sources indicate that the separation was mutual and that Maryse was already looking beyond the WWE, looking to get back into modeling and possibly posing for Playboy.
Woohoo!
Maryse had not been on television recently as she was recovering from surgery that corrected an abdominal hernia.
Maryse, you will be missed. One half of the WWE Tag Team Champions, Evan Bourne, was suspended on Wednesday after violating the company's talent wellness program. Now, Bourne was suspended 30 days effective immediately for his first violation. This is the third WWE performer to be suspended in the past month, following Darren Young and Heath Slater, and sources believe it may have to do with the program cracking down on the usage of synthetic cannabis. Sold under brand names such as K2 and Spice, synthetic cannabis was added to the program's banned substance list in June.
Now, in what might be the biggest news of the year, James, John Cena has officially retired his jorts.
Oh, jeez.
The jean shorts ring gear, and he'll be going with camouflage shorts from here on out. The idea is that he's going to be wearing different colors of camo to represent the different branches of the U.S. military.
Oh, okay. Now, a list representing the most shipped WWE DVDs on the year has surfaced, with the WrestleMania DVD having shipped the most with 229,000 units, which is down 9.5% from last year. The Best of WCW Nitro took second spot with 135,000 units.
Okay, let's get into the financials. Now, the current WWE stock price today, or this morning I should say, it opened at $10.07 a share. It actually closed it by the end of the day at $10.66 a share. And that has to do, I would assume, with the quarterly investor conference call.
Probably, yeah.
Let's try and make sense of this whole thing. It happened this morning. I'll try and keep it simple and not throw out all the official numbers because, quite simply, it's a little difficult to analyze through a radio show. Overall, though, the WWE announced revenues totaling $108.5 million compared to $109.6 million in the year's prior quarter. Operating income was $15.9 million compared to $20.3 million in the prior year. Now, concerning the company's overall profitability, WWE disclosed that profit contribution decreased to $44 million compared to $47.8 million this time last year. WWE attributed the decrease to taking a loss in the WWE Studios department and a lower profit from their licensing department. Now, today, Vince McMahon was quoted as saying, "Despite the challenging economic headwinds, both domestically and abroad, we generated increased profits across a majority of our businesses, with the main exception being our film business, which we continue to monitor and refine to improve future performance. We believe the sluggish economy and our ongoing talent transition were important factors that affected the results of other businesses. Based on our history of developing talent and creating content with broad appeal, we're confident that we can address our creative challenges. Further, by taking advantage of our strategic opportunities, including the anticipated 2012 launch of a WWE network, we can achieve meaningful growth, I should say."
Maybe stop making movies like The Reunion.
It's like so easy, isn't it? Now, with all the figures being down, the departments which have taken the biggest hits are their studios division, like I had said, mm-hmm. and their consumer products. Now, of course, everyone wants to know what the latest is with the planned WWE network, as little has been unveiled up to this point. When asked when the WWE plans to launch the network, CFO George Berrios said he would take the under on 6 months.
speaking in terms of sports betting, of course, which hopefully this will confirm the network launches before WrestleMania in April.
That would be big for them.
Vince McMahon noted that the WWE will not be partnering with any other company to launch the network. No partnership, solely owned by the WWE. When asked if WWE is considering a hybrid model of a traditional cable TV network and some form of online, on-demand function, management danced around the question and stressed they are still finalizing details on how the network will look prior to a very big announcement in the near future. WWE projects this new network will increase expenses by $4 to $6 million. When asked if the new network could overexpose the WWE brand and potentially impact TV ratings and pay-per-view buys, management took an optimistic view in that they believe the network will significantly accelerate their earning growth and increase demand for all WWE products. You don't think that this could flood the market down, James?
I don't think so.
No? It would be nice to be able to watch something WWE-related when you want.
Exactly.
Yeah. When asked if the new network will be able to air content from other TV partners, such as Monday Night Raw replays, Vince McMahon said yes. When asked about the news of WWE partnering with YouTube to provide content, management said they are continuing to explore that.
I think that would be huge for them if they could partner up with YouTube. And have
There was an announcement earlier this week about those two forming a relationship. Apparently, YouTube is coming out with 24/7 channels.
Mm-hmm.
WWE might be one of them. Now, the WWE shows NXT and Superstars, they're not expected to return to TV by the end of the year. And finally, the WWE disclosed that they currently have 100,000 hours of video library content.
Wow.
30% of that is digitized, which will make up the first and significant programming that goes into the network.
Wow, that's a lot of hours of wrestling footage.
To me, the million-dollar question with this WWE network is, how is it going to be broadcast to everyone? Is it going to be on TV? Is it going to be a paid prescription? Is it going to be on the internet only? How are they getting that channel to us?
Maybe,
and that's no one can answer that at this point.
Maybe that's the big announcement that they've got.
Of course. And they're holding it in. Why they're holding it in, I'm not quite sure.
Mm.
To me, that's a little scary. I'm thinking because they don't know yet.
Yeah.
I don't know.
All right. Well, why don't I go over the ratings, Clay?
Sounds good.
Okay, so the October 31st edition of Monday Night Raw, it scored a 3.1 rating this week, down from a 3.31 rating last week following the Vengeance pay-per-view. This week's ratings are very similar to 2 weeks ago leading into the pay-per-view now. Now, Raw averaged 4.49 million viewers with 4.61 in the first hour and 4.37 in the second. It was the fewest number of second-hour viewers in 6 weeks dating back to September. Now, Corey, just to put it into perspective, WWE rarely had an issue with the audience dropping off in the second hour prior to this past summer, but it marks 7 out of the past 10 weeks, like we were mentioning before, where second hour viewership has been less than the first. Now, on cable TV Monday, Raw was number 2 in total viewers behind, of course, Monday Night Football.
And I have a couple or a few pay-per-view official numbers that were released this morning in the conference call. The pay-per-view buys for Money in the Bank, which happened earlier this year, 195,000. That's up from 165,000 in 2010. SummerSlam, 296,000 buys. That's down from 350,000 in 2010.
Ooh, that's big.
And 161,000 buys for their pay-per-view Night of Champions. That's down from 165,000 in 2010.
You know, I honestly thought Money in the Bank would have cracked a quarter of a million buys.
Yeah, you know, that was the most interesting pay-per-view, or most interesting build to a pay-per-view in a very, very long time.
It's been by far the best pay-per-view of the year so far.
I don't think it'll be topped. And my question is, if that's the type of buy rate that you're getting for that pay-per-view, is that really a good sign?
No.
I mean, how can you think it is? I don't know. That is the quarterly investment conference call that took place this week.
Well,
or today, I should say. Not this week.
Was it happened today?
Yeah, this morning.
Oh, perfect. All right, well, we have to take another commercial break here, everybody. But coming up next on the show, we've got the local wrestling scene, and we are sharing our take on ECCW's most recent show, Halloween Hell. And to help us, we're bringing in our local insider, Corey Basso, and we'll chat with him next.
And as always, in tonight's Top 5, we're going to run down the 5 worst wrestling storylines.
This is Smack Talk Radio Live.
Conversions. size of a tire hub. Eating seeds is a pastime activity. The toxicity of our city, of our city.
The local wrestling scene, bringing you up to date with the promotions all over the Pacific Northwest.
Well, we're back. Smack Talk Radio Live. This is the local wrestling scene. Corey, you say this is going to be the best segment on the show?
I do believe that, yes.
I believe it too, buddy.
Now, we just had ECCW's Halloween Hell.
And what a show it was.
It's quite the contrast from what we witnessed a couple weeks ago, but James, Halloween Hell, I mean, this is the ECCW's biggest event of the year, typically.
Kind of like their WrestleMania, yeah.
And you were not disappointed.
No, this was a prime example of how good a show can be if it's booked properly.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic.
Yeah. What did you really like about it, before, without getting into detail?
What did I really like about it? Probably just the atmosphere, everybody dressed up in costumes, the guy dressed up as Y2J, that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was just the atmosphere
that
I really liked the most.
To help us talk about this, we are bringing on our local wrestling insider. His name is Corey Basso. And, I'd like to get his thoughts. I'm hoping to bring him on all the time, actually, as a regular.
Hey, anything to help out?
Corey, are you there, buddy?
I'm right here, fellas. How are you doing tonight?
Not bad. How are you? Not bad, man.
I'm doing very good. I'm just finishing off watching a Kevin Spacey movie, eating some tacos, and ready to talk some wrestling.
Nice, nice.
Well, this is the place to talk wrestling.
How are you? Sorry, go ahead, Corey.
I was going to say, I heard your guys' little speech about Halloween Hell, and I couldn't help but agree more. It's one of those events that, even for indie wrestling, you can't miss. The Halloween atmosphere combined with the raw atmosphere, I guess you could call it, of an indie wrestling show. A little, dim the lights a little bit, add some costumes, and it becomes quite the night.
So what was your overall thoughts? I mean, we're going to get into each match here, but generally, I mean, what were your expectations heading in? And, how did you feel leaving that show?
Well, my first Halloween Hell was 2010, and it was quite the show. The thing I probably like most about Halloween Hell is, even for an indie wrestling promotion, there is quite a build and quite a few intricate storylines that do go into that show. And I was quite surprised that this year it wasn't a... Sorry, go ahead.
No, I didn't say anything.
Oh, sorry, I must have cut out the phone there. What I was saying is... there's quite a few builds going to the storylines there, and usually Halloween Hell is usually treated as kind of a blow-off event where you see the feuds kind of come to an end, but I thought quite a few further feuds could have been made this year, and I thought it was an interesting event and definitely a great one.
Now, sure. Before we get into Halloween Hell, maybe I should just backtrack a little bit. What is your... Where does your knowledge of wrestling come from? Like, how... We're bringing you on as the local insider, but how long have you been following the ECCW for, like, why are we bringing you on the show?
Well, my wrestling expertise is strictly as a fan. I'm pretty sure anybody who covers wrestling is a fan first and foremost. I've been watching wrestling since I was 6 years old. Now, I've only gone into the local scene as far as about 2 years back, but once I got into it, I kind of dove pretty headfirst in, because when there's that kind of wrestling talent right at your fingertips, you don't have to wait for the WWE to come around once a year. You can go and see it every weekend, and that's what kind of drew me in.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, we're careful with our terminology. We're not calling you the expert. We're calling you the insider.
Yeah, so I'm no expert. I'm no expert at wrestling. I am merely a fan who calls it like he sees it, who has perhaps a keen eye for wrestling. But that being said, my opinions are often disagreed with, so I'm a fan first and foremost.
Do you agree with the notion that no one really knows anything about wrestling until they are actually wrestling themselves?
I would lean towards that, definitely, because I'm pretty sure even people in the industry, like, there's things you do know and there's things you don't know. I don't think anybody's a true wrestling aficionado. It's just one of those things. It's almost like writing a movie. There's no such thing as... You can be a good wrestler, but I don't know if you can truly know wrestling unless you're an expert wrestler.
Mm-hmm. And that's something that we are
that's a line that we're treading carefully on with this show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't claim to be the experts. We're just offering our opinion, creating dialogue about it, and merely just offering our thoughts as a spectator, because really that's what James and I are, and that's what you are as well.
And just a forum for other people to voice their opinions and their thoughts as well.
Exactly.
Absolutely. So absolutely. And I'll give you a perfect example. If there's one man who I like the whole Mark Henry Mae Young angle. I know a lot of people don't like that. That was one of my favorite angles. So that goes to show you it's not everybody's cup of tea, but that's wrestling.
Really? Wow. You like that?
Wow. Well, we're going to end the interview right here if that's okay. I'm just joking. Okay, Corey Basso, let's get into it. Halloween Hell, it took place on October 28th. And again, if anyone wants to read the results or get info on the ECCW, you can do so at eccw.com. The night started off with the annual costume battle royal. What were your thoughts on that one?
You know, the costume battle royal, it's one of the most fun events to or matches to start off the event. Last year's was an absolute hoot. You had the Natch, who of course always gets the Peter Griffin chance at events. He actually donned the role of Peter Griffin, and it went over huge. This year, I found it was a little bit. People just kind of went towards like imitating wrestlers. There wasn't a lot of pop culture reference. I thought they could have been a little bit more creative. That being said, you had some hilarious costumes. I thought Michael Sweetster's imitation of CM Punk was interesting. I liked Duffman. I liked V the Bodyguard. He did a Jim the Anvil Neidhart impression that was so over the top bad that it was good. You have your good and your bad from the costume battle royal.
How about referee Bill Taylor's costume?
I knew you guys were going to probably make me talk about that. I don't know what the hell that was. I still don't know what that was. He was a damsel in distress is what I'm calling it, and I think it caught everybody off guard. But it was one of those moments that only the costume battle royal will bring you, and that's what's so special about Halloween Hell.
How about Nick Price versus Alex Plexus for the NWA Junior Canadian Heavyweight Championship?
That one, I know you guys, like myself, you like to make some predictions before you go into cards usually. Even if they're in the back of your head and you don't announce them to everyone, you have your prediction.
Mm-hmm.
This one I cocked up big time. I had Price losing this one to Plexus in the cleanest of fashions. I thought the administration would be busy. I was wrong. Nick Price comes out on top in the dirtiest of fashions. But you know what? I don't think it's a bad move. I don't mind Nick Price. If there's one guy who really the fans despise and he interacts with the crowd, and I think that's what you need in indie wrestling. He does that. He does it well. And you know what? I had no problem with the move. That being said, I hope Plexus gets his rematch.
How far do you think Nick Price actually goes in the ECCW and professional wrestling in general? Do you think he goes quite far?
I don't know if he goes quite that far, but in ECCW, I think he's got a long-standing future. I mean, he's one of those guys that, like I said, you see him at every single show. If you've listened to any past of my Turnbuckle Times already in my previous blogs, he's pretty much on every card.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that kind of devotion, that's what keeps you going in indie wrestling, is the guys who want to be there. I mean, it's not tough. You're not getting paid a whole crap load of money, so it's the guys who want to be there. He puts in the effort, he's interacting with the crowd, and I think he does a great job at it.
I would have to definitely agree on you with you on that one. I find Nick Price to be very charismatic in and outside the ring. I mean, he was walking around the outside of the ring during the Scotty Mac match, and I mean, he portrayed himself very well after winning that belt.
Personally, I feel that if Nick Price had the size, I think he could make it to the bigs, no problem.
Oh, that's a interesting.
Just if he had the size.
Yeah, who knows? Okay, Corey, how about Casey Spinelli versus Nicole Matthews for the ECCW Women's Championship?
This was, I didn't even mention it about Nick Price and Alex Plexus, but much like Casey Spinelli and Nicole Matthews, this match didn't have a whole lot of build. Plexus and Price, I think their build was a 2-minute promo video on ECCW.com. Much the same for Casey and Nicole, but the Supergirl division is so thin in ECCW that these girls have met plenty over the course of the year, so they know each other. It's a developed rivalry. So and you know what? I think it was the right result, to be quite honest with you. Nicole had held the title for almost a year. I thought she had done a great job as being kind of that bully of a champion, but you know what? Casey has just grown and grown over the course of a year. I can remember going back to my first ECCW event, and she didn't look all that great, and she didn't look the most toned, and you know what? She's really turned it around, and I think this is just going to open more doors for her, and I think it was really great of Nicole Matthews to put her over in such a big blockbuster event, and at a time when I think Casey needed it the most.
And that's Casey Spinelli's first title win, is it not?
That is her first championship reign in ECCW, yes.
Could you not tell by the way she was crying after the match, James?
I'm just putting it out there for other people.
I thought that was very good.
It was one of those moments that you would just bank on Nicole Matthews, the character, coming in, you know, blowing that celebration. But they let her have the moment, and I thought it was nice of ECCW to say, you know what, here's for a year's worth of hard work, you know, you did good, you know, and I thought it was a good moment. I liked it.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely enjoy that moment. I enjoyed that moment because it brought credibility to that women's championship. I just thought that it
agreed.
At that point in time, it seemed very important that she had won the title. And you don't see that very often with women's wrestling. So I thought that was a very good moment.
Mm-hmm.
How about Greatness on Demand versus the Bollywood Lions for the ECCW Tag Team Championship?
The biggest surprise of the night for me, gentlemen. I don't know about you guys, but I don't know how many GOD matches you guys seen. I think I've seen probably about a half a dozen up close, live, and personal. And most of them have kind of been, they've been funny, they've had their moments, but they've kind of been lackluster, dire, not the best wrestling matches. I thought GOD stepped it up for the big time. I thought this was going to be a lull in the event. We were going to have a five-minute period where, you know, the intensity goes down. But you know what? They brought it. The first 5 minutes of the match was spent outside kicking the crap out of Lions. I expected the finish that was kind of dirty, but I'm really excited to see what they build on because, of course, after the match, Michelle Starr taking the mic and saying, you know, we want another match of this, and it's on the next ASW card, so I think that could be a really good inter-promotional duel.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that surprised me the most, Corey, was how much crowd support the Bollywood Lions had for being a heel tag team.
You know what? This has been going on for a little while, though. They've slowly been growing because you can't help but not, you know, these guys are lovable. They come out, they dance, they're in your face, they're cocky. And as much of the fan power the GOD had, you're totally right. The shirts, the Bollywood shirts, I got one. They're in the crowd everywhere. It was a good night for them, and I talked to Harv after the show, and he said it was actually kind of humbling, and that's kind of funny considering it's coming from a guy who's going out there to be hated.
At this point, I would call the Bollywood Lions tweeners because I think they're on that bubble of being a good guy, you know, good guys and bad guys. They could go either way, either show, so who knows.
I think they're easily the best tag team in the ECCW, and they deserve whatever support they get, I think.
Absolutely. I agree 100%.
I really like how this whole feud's turned into kind of an inter-promotional feud.
Yes.
That's good. I like that, and I think that's just going to draw more ECCW marks over to ASW and vice versa. I think it's excellent.
Yeah, it's going to be nothing but good for both promotions.
Do you know much about that history between the ECCW and ASW and the men at the helm? There's a long history to go with it, but do you know how this has all come back together?
This has all kind of come back together. If I'm not mistaken, the real focal points are Disco Fury and Michelle Starr. These guys have trained a majority, or have had a hand in training a majority of the wrestlers who do wrestle in ASW as well as ECCW. You could tell in the middle of this match, I think me and you guys were standing side by side when Michelle Starr and Disco Fury taunted to the audience, we train these guys as a joke, because you know what, they actually did train them. So I think it comes from that, and then when they branched off into the ASW, I think there's a good inter-promotional rivalry there, but at the same time, I don't think there's beef. I think they're all on good talking terms, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Okay, how about Sid Sylum versus Bishop in the dog collar chain match?
This match actually made me kind of sad. I don't know why. Maybe it was the build up to the story, or to the match itself. It was quite a gruesome story, and I think of all the matches on this card, it really required a story in the ring. And while it was gruesome, I thought we did get the story in the ring. Of course, the natural tainting the victory for Bishop. They won't consider it tainted, of course, but Sid Sylum getting his brains bashed in,
and I don't know where
he goes after this. He was comprehensively buried in that feud. I don't think he's the licking, so it'll be interesting to see what they do with Sid after this.
Now, there was a bit of discrepancy in that match, and you and I were kind of talking back and forth during the match. At one point, Sylum actually took off the dog collar. Now, do you know what the ruling is on that? Is he allowed? I mean, obviously he was, because the match was able to, or he was able to continue in the match without wearing the dog collar. But did you ever look into whether or not he, or, you know, in the past with dog collar chain matches, whether or not they are allowed to take them off?
I haven't actually done any research into that, but if you watched later on in the match, Sid went to go apply the pin after hitting his finisher trademark Tombstone Piledriver on the chain on Bishop, and he kind of limply put the collar around the neck. So I think the ruling is based on that, is that you must have the collar around your neck while you're making the pinfall. Now, we obviously thought they'd take it off during the match and wrestle quite a bit, but I don't think he was able to make a pinfall with it on.
Yeah, I think you're right on that for sure. I mean,
It did seem a little odd at the time, but I haven't seen...
It was confusing.
Yeah, I haven't seen too many dog collar chain matches, though, so I can't even pretend to be an expert on
you
that
know what,
one.
Honestly, me personally, I missed about half this match because I had Sid Sylum's sister actually standing beside me talking to me for most of the match.
That's right, and she made an appearance in the match as well.
Yeah, she made a run-in.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
I think the most...
Go ahead.
I think the most interesting part of this is just to see where both guys go. Obviously, Bishop is... He's a monster. He's being built as one. He's on an upward tear, but they really got to start rebuilding Sylum. Otherwise, they better stick him in the Costume Battle Royal every year because he comprehensively got his ass kicked over the past 6 months.
Harsh words from Corey Basso tonight.
Yeah, that finish had to be the sickest chair shot I've seen in any wrestling.
Yeah, that was very devastating.
Scrambled eggs.
Yeah. How about the Moondog Manson Invitational, the Bring Your Weapons, or the Fans Bring Their Weapons match?
It's never going to be a bad match when there's nine guys beating the crap out of each other with water coolers and keyboards. Come on, fellas. It was a fantastic match.
Well, what a cluster that was, though, eh?
That was kind of hard to follow, yes, especially if you weren't able to make your way around all four sides of the ring, but I got some wicked video of somebody getting something shattered over there, and I don't know. The interesting part, I thought, I have to comment on this, and just on my experience at Halloween Hell, 2010 had so many good creative weapons. This year, not so much, not so many creative weapons, and I thought it was a shame because not too many wrestling events where the promotion extends the courtesy of letting the fans bring the weapons, you know?
Have you ever seen them turn away fans' weapons?
Yes, I actually saw a guy get his weapon turned away this year. He had what looked like he had imagine like a plastic popcorn bowl. He had punctured holes in it and had forks sticking out of it, almost like a forked helmet, and they rejected him.
Really? And you brought something to the show as well?
I brought shaving cream, lime-scented shaving cream, but I don't think it got used.
No.
Boo.
You were very disappointed, if I remember correctly.
I had nothing to shave with. I had to go buy new shaving cream. I thought they'd use it at least.
All right. How about Scotty Mac versus Jason Sullivan in a steel cage match?
These guys have fought each other quite a few times over the past year, and none of them have been like mind-blowing affairs. Scotty Mac finds a way to make matches watchable with guys who sometimes are not the most interesting guy to watch is to watch. But this one, I thought he did another good job. Him and Jason Sullivan pulled off a believable match, but I think the real icing on the cake here was Price flying off the top, because otherwise it was pretty much just a mat work, basic cage match, but that really put the exclamation point on the night, I think, for Price.
Would you go with the notion that, or would you agree with me when I say that Jason Sullivan is a very good big man in the ring?
He is a very good big man. He is very agile, but I find a lot of his matches are formulaic, as big men matches tend to be. If Jason Sullivan isn't completely schooling the other guy is just wearing down the knee, and it has become very formulaic, and very often Jason Sullivan sells the wrong leg, which is not a big deal, but it bothers me for some reason. I don't know. I'm on the fence with Jason Sullivan. Maybe it's because I've seen too much of him over the last little while, but he is a good worker. Maybe I'm just being oversaturated with Sully.
Okay, fair enough. Now, how about the main event, which saw a six-man elimination cage match for the NWA Canadian Heavyweight Championship, and that consisted of Tony Baroni, the champion, versus Artemis Spencer, El Phantasmo, Pete Powers, Ravenous Randy, and the Honky Tonk Kid.
First thing I'm going to say about this is WWE should watch this match and take notes.
I thought it was a very well-executed match as well. Now, I did on my recap, I kind of broke down everybody's performance, but I won't do that here. I just thought you've hit the nail right on the head. They've managed to use the cage for spots. Everybody played their role pretty well to a T. I thought maybe Ravenous could have toned down the comedic back a bit, but I thought everyone did well, and just some of the spots that went down in this match. These guys don't have to do this. They're not being paid hundreds of thousands of dollars. Some of the stuff LP and Artie are doing, it's nuts. And you know what? I want to give a big up to the Honky Tonk Kid, who I know you guys had on the show, as well as Pete Powers, for stepping up, because I had some questions about them being in this match, maybe not main event caliber as of yet, but they stepped it up and they had a really good tilt.
I was actually extremely surprised to see the Honky Tonk Kid eliminated first in this match.
Me too.
Really?
Yeah, I thought he was going to go. I mean, he was my pick to go the whole way.
Well, I wouldn't go that
far. Pick the Honky Tonk Kid.
I did.
I wouldn't go that far, but...
Oh,
well. Oh man.
I really enjoy it. I find him to be one of the most charismatic guys in the ring. And I think if you gave him a title and let him run with it, I think amazing stuff would happen.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I think he's great talent, but I don't think he should have been eliminated first.
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm surprised that he was eliminated first.
Yeah.
So
I'm surprised you guys picked him not to be eliminated first. I had him being eliminated first for sure.
For me, he is
up to par as far as character wise. I don't see him as a main event wrestler. I thought he was more there just as a character, and for the limited time he did spend in the match, I thought he did his character well, but I didn't see him going all the way. But I do agree with the notion that you guys think that he could run with a belt. He's a very lovable guy. I think it's just a matter of in-ring work and showing up, because Profit isn't the most reliable of guys to make shows. So.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't really know that aspect of the whole saga with him, but fair enough. What was your favorite moment in this match?
Oh God, you could pick quite a few here.
Yeah, that is true.
I like Pete Powers when he came in and kind of wrecked house, because Ravenous Randy had kind of turned it into a comedic sideshow for a little while, just running around doing thriller dances. Kind of, the crowd was into it, but I don't know if they needed that in an intense match like that. I like that, and I also liked Artie's spot, which I think he's a mental case for trying, where he just kind of limply let himself fall backwards off the top of the cage. I don't know what went through his head, but that was a crazy spot that I don't think I'll ever see again.
How about the backflip from El Fantasmo? Off the top of the steel cage.
Oh, it's unreal what that guy will do to his body to appease some fans. But you know what? That being said, that crowd was totally in love with him. When he was eliminated, he literally had to rally the crowd to support Baroni and Artie just because they were so choked he was gone. So he's over.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Corey, thank you very much for reviewing Halloween Hell with us. Now, you are the creator, producer, host of Turnbuckle Time podcast. That's on hold right now, is that right?
That is on hold. Currently looking for a new co-host. My last co-host, Shane, had to make a move to Prince George, and it's kind of rough setting up a schedule with him, so I'm sending out the notice on Craigslist looking for a new co-host.
Well, we're hoping that we can bring you on as a regular every so often to talk local wrestling with us, so we're hoping you'll take us up on that offer. But you...
Well, obviously.
You have a blog going, though, right now, is that right?
I actually just started up. I've been putting off a blog for so long because I just figured I'd do everything through audio because I didn't want to type, I would just speak. But I've just started the blog. It's called The Basso Blog. All my blogs are being posted to ECCW.com when it is related to that, so you can generally just check ECCW.com's media or news column. And yeah, I'm probably going to be trying to recap as many local wrestling events as possible, so I'll probably be out at the November 5th event coming up this weekend, and we'll see what we can get done there.
Okay, our local wrestling insider, Corey Basso, thanks very much, man.
Thank you, Corey.
Thank you, boys. Have a good night, and love the show.
All right, appreciate that. Talk to you soon. That was Corey Basso. Your thoughts, James?
You know what? I think he will be a very welcome addition to the show, man.
He is very insightful on the local wrestling scene, especially ECCW. He just knows. You know what's funny is that I watch him at the show, and he just watches the show as a casual fan.
Yeah, he gets into it, he chants.
And then he comes home, and he just seems to remember everything that took place at the show. And he writes it all down in his blog, and I'm thinking to myself, how do you remember all that stuff? Because when I'm watching the show, I leave there, and I'm just like...
What happened?
I got to go home and read the results like I was, you know, like I wasn't even there. He's very good at remembering what went on. I don't know. Well, Corey Basso, I hope to bring him on a lot more, as he said he would.
Yeah, which is very welcome addition to the show, in my opinion.
Okay, so we should probably take one more commercial break here before our... You know, before our top five. And what is our top five again?
Top five is top five worst wrestling storylines.
Really? Is this your list or is this the list?
This is the list.
All right.
The definitive list. Will Rock Cena make the list?
All right.
Find out next.
Smack Talk Radio Live. In the saw full of tracks to add to the wall full of plaques, hanging up in the office and back of my house like trophies. Did y'all think I'ma let my dough freeze? Oh please, you better bow down on both knees. Who you think taught you to smoke trees? Who you think brought you to ODs? Easy E's, Ice Cubes and DOCs, the Scoop Deal Double G's, and the group that said motherfuck the police. Gave you a tape full of dope beats to bump when you stroll through in your hood, and when your album sales wasn't doing too good, who's the doc that he told you to go see? Y'all better listen up closely. All you niggas that said that I turn pop or the fur flop, y'all are the reason that Dre ain't been getting no sleep. So fuck y'all, all of y'all. If y'all don't like me, blow me. Y'all gonna keep fucking around with me and turn me back to the old me.
Nothing.
You're listening to Smack Talk Radio Live. Helping you remember what most of us couldn't. Tonight's top five.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to Smack Talk Radio Live. This is tonight's top five. And tonight, we're going to go through the top five worst wrestling storylines. Let's kick it off with number five, the Muhammad Hassan and Daivari terrorist angle. Now, this is what happens when you take a really good angle, wrestler, and character and go too far. Muhammad Hassan was actually a very good worker who was getting a huge push as a Middle Eastern man in the wake of the 9/11 attacks. Now, it's nothing new to pit an enemy of the United States in matches, beginning with the evil German wrestlers of the 50s and 60s, the Iron Sheik, and the never-ending scheme of Soviets who were in the business during the Cold War. However, the angle went a little bit too far when Daivari was scheduled to face The Undertaker in a squash match at a SmackDown taping, where during the beatdown, Hassan began praying and a group of terrorists in ski masks attacked The Undertaker. Whoops, did I mention this episode happened the same day as the Al-Qaeda terrorist attacks on the downtown London? The result was outrage from almost everybody who saw the match and the firing of Hassan and Daivari from WWE.
Crazy. Number four, the Buff Bagwell wheelchair incident. Now, during his run in WCW, Marcus Bagwell suffered a very real and very serious broken neck at the hands of Rick Steiner. It was a botched diving bulldog that went wrong, and the initial prognosis was that Bagwell's career was over and he might not ever be able to walk again. However, Bagwell dedicated himself to rehab and was ready to make amends with Steiner for his injury in a touching display of sportsmanship and forgiveness. As Bagwell sat in his wheelchair and assured Steiner there were no hard feelings, he then jumped out of his chair, beat the crap out of Rick, and joined the NWO. Now, in a business where you were just one botched move away from paralysis, God, that's a hard word, paralysis or even death, Buff Bagwell used his second chance in the wrestling business as a cheap mid-card level promo for the NWO. Only one has to wonder what a man like Darren Drozdoff would have done if he had such a second chance.
That'll bring us to number three, Kane and Katie Vick. Now, if we haven't gone far enough on this list so far, then how about some good old-fashioned necrophilia? Now, if you've ever wondered why Kane was so damn weird, well, Triple H had the answer. And apparently it's because he screwed dead chicks. Well, in this case, a dead chick named Katie Vick, who Kane was in love with but wouldn't date him. So after poor Katie died in a car crash, Kane allegedly had sex with her corpse. To make the storyline even better, Helmsley showed a video of himself in a Kane mask banging a mannequin in a coffin just to prove how twisted Kane really was. Now, if that's not a good, clean family entertainment, I don't know what is.
All right, number two, exploiting Eddie Guerrero. Ooh. Now, this one makes the list with the exception of Buff Bagwell. It is very real and very disgraceful. The angle began soon after the death of the well-respected superstar when his nephew Chavo began beefing with Rey Mysterio, the selling point being that Chavo felt Rey was a leech living off Eddie Guerrero's name, and credited Eddie with putting Rey over while being jealous that he should be getting a major push, not Rey. If the feud would have just been between these two, it wouldn't have been so bad, but then Eddie's real-life widow Vicky inserted herself in the storyline. However, Vicky soon sided with Chavo, using the death of her husband as nothing more than a backstory for a cheap heel turn. I realized that Vicky Guerrero was a young widow with kids to support, but to tarnish the legacy and respected name of her husband and his family, that's a little low. One can blame Vince for approving such a storyline. However, it takes two in the order to make a deal, and Vicky, being Eddie's wife, had a greater responsibility to her family and her husband's legacy than to sell it out so cheap.
Yeah, you know what? I really didn't like that whole thing they did after Eddie Guerrero died and they had the Rey and Chavo feud. It's just, it was really kind of disrespectful.
Mm-hmm. Well, this brings us to our number one worst wrestling storyline.
There was an incident at the ECW arena one time where Raven got the idea to crucify Sandman.
What in God's name are they doing?
The whole time I'm doing that, me and Meanie were there, and you know, Raven's like, yo, time up, put the cross up. And I'm there going, oh, this is fucked up, Meanie, this is fucked up. He's like, I know, because Meanie's Catholic too, so I was like, this is bullshit, man.
This is the most horrifying thing I've ever seen in my life.
There you go, number one.
Number one is none other than the Sandman crucifixion incident. Now, there's one simple way to know that you've gone too far with a wrestling storyline. If you've ever offended every single fan in attendance at the old ECW arena, then the odds are you've gone too far. Now, at one time, I honestly believed that nothing was too hardcore or extreme for ECW fans. After all, I mean, these are the fans who watched the mass transit incident, they watched Tommy Dreamer get beaten with a kendo stick for 20 minutes, they were cussed out on a nightly basis by the Dudleys, I mean, they even watched the Sandman's own kid turn against him and literally worship Raven. Now, back on October 26th, 1996, the Sandman's son interfered in a match between Raven and the Sandman and helped his father. After the match, the two embraced, but Raven came from behind with a kendo stick and smacked his enemy. Stevie Richards and the Blue Meanie came out into the ring, got a wooden cross from underneath the ring, and then proceeded to tie the Sandman down to it, then lifted him up and crucified him and carried him out of the building. Now, the backlash was so bad that Paul Heyman even made Raven break kayfabe and come to the ring as Scott Levy to apologize for putting the Sandman at the same level as Jesus Christ, and even Kurt Angle, who was at the show to promote a story with Taz, threatened to sue ECW if any footage of him at this show was ever used.
Crazy.
That is crazy.
I don't think you should be mixing religion with wrestling in that scenario.
You can, but I mean, yeah, that's going a little bit too far.
God. ECW at its finest, I guess.
Absolutely. Well, there you have it. That was this week's top five.
Top five worst wrestling storylines. And that's funny we talk about that this week, James, because it's somewhat related to what's going on right now, wouldn't you say?
It's just been an hour and somewhat of negativity, hasn't it?
This week, I feel like it absolutely has been. Like I said on Monday, I don't want to be this negative, but...
Well, what can you do,
what
right?
What can you do? Okay, before we get out of here, James, I want to quickly run down the poll question one more time. The poll question, who should be the WWE champion right now? I mean, of course, we all know it's Alberto Del Rio, but who should be the champion right now? John Cena, Alberto Del Rio, CM Punk, Triple H, or David Arquette? And the results, James?
Well, it looks like 61% of you say CM Punk. So they're going with you, buddy.
Hey, they got good taste. What can I say? I mean, how can you deny it?
Yes and no. It's debatable.
Come on. That punk shoot promo in Vegas earlier in the year, that to me solidified everything CM Punk does from here on out. He is the only one that can keep up with a man like John Cena. He should be the champion.
I don't know. I just prefer to see CM Punk chasing the belt.
For how long, though?
I don't know, just until...
I get frustrated with how they've been treating him. I mean,
you know what?
He deserves better than this.
Have him chase the belt until Royal Rumble, and then have put the strap on him at Royal Rumble, have him carry it into WrestleMania.
Maybe he wins the Royal Rumble.
That's a possibility, too.
That's another conversation for down the road.
We'll delve into that one.
Okay, on next week's show, we got to get out of here. On next week's show, we're going to continue the hype to build, or the hype... The build to Survivor Series.
There we go.
And hopefully there's a little more to chat about in terms of build to this pay-per-view. We're also going to bring you the weekly news in our post-to-post report. We're going to talk local wrestling, highlighting the results of ECCW's next show, Brains, Bronze, and Class.
That's November 5th, and that's Kitsilano at the yes. Russian Community Center.
Yes. Now, one more time before we get out of here, James. We're back on Monday for SRL on a Monday night. And just quickly, what is that one more time?
That's just our review of Monday Night Raw. Happens about half hour after Raw goes off the air. We hit the studio and we just turn on the mics and we go at it. It's amateur, it's Raw. It's a forum for you people. So
if you are watching Monday Night Raw on Monday and you've got a take and you want us to read it on the air, email us onair@smacktalkradiolive.com, or you can also post a message on facebook.com/smacktalkradio.
That's right.
And of course, if you want to check us out anytime, www.smacktalkradiolive.com. My name is Corey Callahan.
I'm James McDonald. Another big thanks to Corey Basso.
We will see you on Monday.